Good morning. If you're here for a conversation around health insurance and Gold Hospital products, you are in the right place. Today's session is in Gold v. Trust, looking at how actuaries can help solve the challenges of Gold Hospital. This session's been put together by the Health Practice Committee's Working Group on Gold Hospital Products. The Gold Hospital Products Working Group was established in June 2024 by the Health Practice Committee and is made up of a diverse cohort of the actuarial health community. We've been exploring issues in the Gold Hospital market and discussing potential changes that could improve the sustainability of the system, drawing on the experience and expertise of the working group. We're joined today by two speakers. Anthony is an actuary with over 20 years of experience, and for the last 5 years, he's been working in health insurance, AASB 17 implementation and general insurance. Anthony feels a keen demand to support and assist the industry. He's been a member of the Health Practice Committee since 2016, is chairing the Actuaries Institute Working Group on Gold Hospital, and is a member of the AASB 17's Public Insurer Focus Group. He's joined by fellow working group member Nathaniel. Nathaniel's a health insurance actuary who joined NIB in 2017. He's worked in actuarial and finance roles supporting the Australian health insurance business, but is currently the head of actuarial for NIB New Zealand. When he's not assisting with product design, pricing, liability, valuations, and new strategic initiatives, Nathaniel's contributing to thought leadership through the Actuaries Institute and assisting future actuaries along their professional journey. So why don't we make the two of them welcome, and we'll get started. Thank you.
Thank you, Nick. So we do have quite a bit of material to go through, so we are going to be going through some parts reasonably quickly today. As Nick was saying, we are going to be talking about the Gold Hospital products, so that's going to be very specifically Gold standalone hospital products, so things would change a little bit if you started looking at combined products. And we're looking at how do we approach fixing what we see as an issue which is occurring in that space. So I do want to acknowledge the traditional custodians of the lands and the waters where we live and work, travel and trade, and pay respects to elders past and present. We do also want to thank the other members of the task force, the Gold Hospital Task Force, the other members who were involved with putting together the insight session back in September, which this is going to rely on quite a bit, and Greg Morris, who helped with the presentation creation. So firstly, what is happening? And I am going to go quickly because I'm going to make a little bit of an assumption that most people in this room do already have a background here. In the last 3 to 4 years, we have seen a reduction in the number of the share of members who have on Gold products of around 15%. So it's gone from 40% to 34%. During that time, we're seeing funds close products, hide products sometimes from their websites, and we've also seen, for the average Gold price, around a 40% increase across the last 4 years in premium rates. So there's been a real issue and a concern that the fundamentals of community rating of affordable access to these products is reducing. And, of course, the Gold product has certain clinical coverage which is only required to be offered on Gold. So if the Gold product isn't affordable and available, it's not necessarily providing access to the community for some of those clinical categories. We've also seen a real change in who is purchasing Gold. So at the moment, what we're seeing is that young members are buying Gold, whereas older members are really predominantly getting Silver and Silver Plus products. And we're also seeing that Gold, in addition to Basic, has the highest level of new entrants taking it up of any of the products. And I would point out here that that's not going to be capturing anyone who purchases a lower tier product, uses a mental health waiver to shift up to Gold, which effectively they won't have purchased Gold first, but within a 12-month period of entering the system, they will be on a Gold product. We are seeing that the interaction between Gold and risk equalization does leave a little bit of a gap. At the moment, REF is very good at covering older Australians, where anyone who's over 65 funds get over 60% back. If it's a very, very large hospital claim over a short period of time, then again, funds get a lot of money back. But for certain key clinical categories, which are generally used more by younger Australians, or a much larger share of younger Australians use them than other clinical categories, REF does not perform quite so well. Psychiatric treatment has to hit the 50K threshold before that triggers. Obstetrics, so pregnancy, it has high frequency, low of cost, but they are generally under that cap, and generally the age-based limit doesn't apply at all. And weight loss surgery and IVF are also ones which are on that gold category and have limited access to the RE system. Obviously, with weight loss, it can be a little bit more with older Australians. So, and I've got here in quotes the spiral, because it seems like any discussion on long-term health needs to have some discussion of a spiral. But it is creating an adverse selection spiral, where effectively people who have plans to utilize these services, which are only available on gold, purchase gold. Funds are then seeing the expense of those gold products increase. They are reacting by increasing premiums. They're also offering alternatives such as Silver Plus with joints and other clinical categories, which are very attractive to elderly Australians. They're also reducing the number of gold products they're offering. That, of course, means that good risks can either stay in closed products, they can move to Silver Plus products, or simply not be part of a system, which, of course, then leads to a higher gold premium again as the costs per member increase. Effectively, what we're seeing is that gold is becoming a niche product for younger Australians who want to purchase gold to access these clinical categories, and it's not working so well for anyone who wants that original idea of health insurance, of a broad spectrum protection against just anything, because it's becoming very expensive for that group. So this does lead into, well, what is the key issue here? What do we think it is? And we do think it's that the community rating principles are under threat. So effectively, if we have a lack of affordable or available coverage for these clinical categories, then it really raises the question, is health insurance system providing the support that we want, and is it providing the coverage that we want? We should be aware that there are already distortions for community rating. We have discounts, we have closed and corporate products, we have discounts for, we have the hospital tiers themselves, which are obviously feeding into this issue. And we have restricted funds. So there is also a question, is this necessarily a bad thing? Because what we are saying is that effectively a lot of people who are planning on claiming and planning on making large claims are paying more to have that access. And obviously in a lot of other areas in insurance, that would be the response of having a higher premium would be completely acceptable. And this is something which was called out when hospital tiers were being consulted on. The industry did warn or highlight that it was likely to lead to an increase in gold prices, because that would be the only tier which had certain clinical categories, and so certain high-cost clinical categories, and therefore people may switch to those. So there is a question, is this actually a flaw or not? But we do, as a Gold Task Force, think that there is a key issue, which is accessibility. That at least the plan, the principle is that under community rating, that it should be available, that there should be both a broad spectrum offer, and there should also be access to all of these clinical categories. And some of them are critical clinical categories. I mean, pregnancy especially, you've probably all seen the press on that one around views of, is it discriminatory that it is only on gold, for example. So having it accessible at an affordable rate, having these available across the whole spectrum of funds is important. But we should note that at the moment, for most members, they are able to access all the clinical categories that they want to cover. And actually, this is probably reducing their cost, because ring-fencing those higher claimers probably is actually reducing costs for other members, and therefore potentially increasing participation. And I'll switch over to Nathaniel now.
Thank you, Anthony. It's a natural response from insurers, right, in response to the adverse selection spiral that we see them reduce accessibility, limit availability, and also increase pricing on Gold Hospital products. And so during our insight session, we asked all of you, hopefully you came along to the insight session, do you think this behaviour that we're seeing earlier is a problem? And you've told us yes, right? That's why we're having this presentation here, because we want to provide thought leadership on how we go about addressing this problem. And so I think it's helpful that we've identified the key issue of accessibility, because that then gives us a framework for assessing effectiveness of potential levers or solutions or changes that we're going to shortly cover off during this presentation. So now that we've identified a framework, how do we assess the effectiveness of a solution or our proposed interventions? Now, this should probably reflect an improvement in accessibility, right? Be it through pricing or be it through availability. Well, we can have a further discussion or debate on if we should be prioritising either of those, but ideally it would be both. But what we'll quickly discover is that as we go through some of these levers or interventions, that there's really no silver bullet, right? If there was, we'd probably already have done it by now. So there's going to be winners and losers from any of these, and I think the optimal solution obviously tries to find the right balance between those winners and losers. So our proposed goal for a solution, quite simply, is to reduce the cost of access for clinical categories currently only available on Gold and inherently the cost of a full coverage insurance product. Now, obviously, that should be consistent with overall system sustainability as well. So now that we've got a framework, now that we've got a proposed solution, we can start assessing some interventions or levers against the effectiveness of our goals. So what we're about to cover in detail is certainly not an exhaustive list. We expect the ones discussed here to have the most promise based on the analysis, the conversations that the Gold Hospital Working Group has produced. However, we will acknowledge that the likeliness and effectiveness of individual solutions presented could and most likely will become more than the sum of its parts when combined with other measures. And also highlight that there is, to an extent, a degree of subjectivity around some of our findings around the proposed solutions and levers. Particularly, we've approached this at a high level. Even within our broad levers or solutions that we've identified, there's particular ways that you could go about implementing it, and that will obviously have differing impacts on our stakeholders as well. So bear that in mind as we kick off with a discussion on modifications to waiting periods. So relying to an extent on the experience of the Irish model, where insurers are allowed to permit waiting periods for up to 5 years, from a principles-based perspective, right, this solution you'd expect to like directly address the hit-and-run claiming behaviour that is contributing to the adverse selection issue on Gold. But there is a nuance to this lever in that does it actually reduce access to treatment further? And reflecting back on our goals of improving accessibility, that's something that will need to be considered. And what are the impacts then on the attractiveness of the Gold Hospital proposition in market? Are we actually supporting improved access to these treatment categories? While from a first principles perspective, we'd obviously be improving the affordability of the Gold option, at least in the short term from this proposal. Secondary impacts would also be pretty tricky to determine as well, particularly when it comes to assessing stakeholder impacts on, say, hospitals, particularly given that in the short term, obviously, we're extending waiting periods. Does that then create barriers to accessing care for mental health and obstetrics in the private setting? So in the short term, you may actually have different stakeholder responses to this proposal when viewed in that short-term lens versus a more longer-term or holistic perspective. And so just touching on some of that now, what we've presented here is sort of like a balanced scale of how we think on the whole some of our options might be perceived by different stakeholders. So we can definitely see here for existing gold customers, it would improve access and affordability. But for those seeking to join Gold Tier Cover, obviously it limits accessibility in the short term. So yeah, it's that trade-off with this one, I think, which makes it quite an interesting one to discuss. So we'll move on to the next one. PHI actuary's favourite topic of conversation, I think, risk equalisation. Also quite topical, I think, given the recent Department of Health consultation paper on reforms. It mentioned some potential risk equalisation reform options. And so I thought it would be a missed opportunity if we didn't raise it in this forum. So, one option certainly could be to add obstetrics and mental health to the risk equalisation system. How you do that? Open topic of conversation, I think, in terms of what level of cross subsidisation and support that the industry is offering these treatment categories, and then also how that interacts with some of the existing risk equalisation parameters also makes for an interesting conversation. Reflecting back on the affordability versus access nuance, it's an interesting one, right? Because in the short term, I think we can all fairly safely agree that it should improve the affordability of gold hospital products, but does it actually address some of the adverse selection issues that have been causing some of the accessibility issues in the first place? And I think it's touching on the sum of its parts theme before, I think, there's definite potential for a hybrid solution, not wanting to bury the lead on this one. For including risk equalisation form as part of a more holistic or broader suite of changes in order to more succinctly and acutely address the gold hospital challenges. So covering off some of what those stakeholder impacts might be for risk equalisation, the reality is, right, you're going to make gold hospital more affordable, more accessible for consumers wanting to access those treatment categories, but indirectly you're going to make every other type of cover more expensive, right? So you have a significant cohort of your existing customer base who are now having to essentially pay or cross-subsidise those treatment categories where they weren't before. So that is inherently going to need to be absorbed, and it'll probably be absorbed by insurer pricing. On the other hand, this one's probably a more palatable option for providers as well. Immediately we're increasing improving the affordability and access of gold services, and reflecting back on the PHI consultation paper where this was a potential change that was put forward, there seems to be some potential appetite for changes of this nature to actually occur. The challenge with risk equalisation also is that there's significant scope for the parameters with varying impacts on stakeholders too. So while there may be appetite for change, there's obviously quite a few fingers in the particular PHI pie when it comes to this at the moment. If this does get legs, it would be interesting to see the various stakeholder responses to how this might actually be implemented. I think it's also probably remiss not to mention as well, while it has been a couple of years ago, the work of the Definity Risk Equalisation Study, and whether we should actually be considering some of these changes as part of a more holistic review of the way the risk equalisation scheme works, a la a prospective system. So moving on to government support. So again, this was there's an option here that was, I think, potentially considered as part of the reforms paper. Our option here suggests, okay, so does the government actually directly fund obstetrics and psychiatric hospital services as an option? And as secondary options as well, do we play around with some of the existing carrots and sticks that exist in the system? Be it, do we link product tier to getting a higher rebate percentage, or do we actually provide an lifetime health cover loading exemption if someone purchases a gold product? So again, the challenge with this one would be finding the right balance between different stakeholders. While direct government funding or subsidies for obstetrics and psychiatric services obviously improve affordability, it doesn't come with a cost, right? That's the taxpayer at the end of the day that would be funding that. The interesting thing with some of the tweaks to existing carrots and sticks would be maybe there is an option there which doesn't involve significant additional government funding, or maybe it's actually revenue generating. But what are the downsides from a consumer lens or from a fund lens associated with some of those? So, yeah, just touching on some of the stakeholder impacts. Again, it's going to depend on how we go about implementing that. What are the settings? What are the parameters? But given how broad this one is, there is likely a combination of parameters or solutions which does achieve our aims of increasing accessibility and improving affordability of the gold product. So, as I mentioned before, by no means an exhausting list of the options we've covered, and there are many, many more that the working group has considered as part of its work over the last couple of months. Some of the most interesting of these, I think, are actually like changes to the tiering system. So, for example, we would look to include gold tier services, bring them down onto a bronze or a basic level of cover. And again, I think the theme of greater than the sum of its parts holds here as well, right? Each of these changes, while in isolation might not move the dial, could be an important component of some broader legislative changes that would be needed to properly address the gold affordability issue. So other ones we've covered that we've touched on. So do we force funds to have an open gold product to try and improve the accessibility? But then again, that doesn't really address one of the key fundamental issues driving the adverse selection spiral that we've been seeing. And then I guess, yeah, also important to touch on just the nature of the care pathways for some of the clinical categories that are covered on gold as well. There's obviously broader community concerns around the nature of the care pathway, particularly for something like a pregnancy care where there's significant out-of-pockets faced for members even when they are relying on their private health insurance to fund some of that care. And so while hospitals may be crying poor about the declining utilisation of their maternity wards, well, is that a more holistic system issue that needs to be addressed? And really, this is just one part of the puzzle for trying to address that particular issue. So I'll pass back to Anthony to round off the session.
So as Nathaniel was just talking about, we did look at a number of different levers that could be made changes, and we've highlighted the ones here which we thought on their own would fix the issue, even if they have a lot of secondary issues. But certainly one of the things we think is probably going to be more realistic is that there probably will be some type of hybrid result where we're using multiple levers to try and create a more balanced result, which hopefully means that stakeholders who lose out in one area benefit in another. There's many, many ways these levers can be put together to create potential solutions. This, I do want to stress what we're putting here is an example. It's not meant to be the final recommended solution, but it does show how adding different elements together can potentially result in something which is a little bit more balanced. And what we've taken here is the risk equalization, the waiting periods, and one of those extra areas we looked at, which was to change the access to certain clinical categories and say, well, what would happen if you combined all these three? How would you get, what kind of balanced result would you get if you did that? So looking at that combination, it does have quite a few number of pros. You get the benefits of risk equalization, which means these claims now have a lower cost to health funds, which means that they should be pricing those clinical categories at a lower cost than they currently are. You do have the waiting periods, which should reduce that hit and run behavior and potentially mean that members have to buy into the system a little bit before they can actually access certain higher cost claims areas. You would encourage participation because obviously members need to, if they want to access, say, pregnancy, then they need to buy the cover earlier than they currently would be. And you should, as a result, get a reduction in gold prices and just the general cost of those clinical categories. It's also balances some of the negatives around accessibility that Nathaniel mentioned with waiting periods by providing access on all hospital tiers for those clinical categories. But of course, that does also lead to, but certainly still negatives. So certainly people who want to access those claims quickly, wouldn't those clinical categories quickly, wouldn't be able to. We would certainly see an increase in cost for other non-gold hospital tiers, both because of the shared risk equalization costs going back around, but also that the coverage is higher. So the, and the other general negatives that we saw on some of those other, the waiting period suggestions would also apply here. So as Nathaniel mentioned, there is no silver bullet. This one would definitely have negative stakeholder impacts, but it would also have positive stakeholder impacts. Some of those restrictions in coverage or accessibility because of waiting periods are being offset by increased accessibility via higher coverage on lower tiers. To protect the funds against having to offer those higher cost clinical categories on lower tiers, you've got risk equalization, but that does feed through to higher calculated deficits, so higher costs on other premiums. How that would all wash out with participation, that mix of higher access, incentives to get into your access earlier, but against higher premiums, it would, we're not really sure how that one would play out. And it does have some of the similar issues to other underlying ones, such as that you would need to make legislative changes, and there would be a lot of operational issues in that funds would need to be able to know how long members had spent on different tiers and in different with access to different clinical categories. So there would be an operational stress there for funds as well. Certainly when we look at those stakeholders, and again, to stress, the exact tilt here, these tilts are not meant to be exact. They've just been graphical shows, but we do think that a hybrid approach, and not necessarily this one, but just generally, probably will get a more even balance. In an example like this, we would certainly see that we think it would be very good for existing gold members because they would see significant price reductions. There'd be less incentive for funds to hide or close off gold products or separate open versus closed ones. Certainly from the private and public hospital system, there'd be pros and cons. Some of those cons would be short-term with the waiting period access, but longer-term, they should have greater PHI participation and therefore, at least for people who are planning on these accessing these elements, and so therefore should be better. While people who are higher, who are older and don't really want to access these clinical categories, it's probably mostly bad for them because they will be subsidizing to a degree those other members. So it's definitely a still a balancing act. But we do think a hybrid system or hybrid approach of some type is probably the better approach. So I do just want to quickly talk about what the task force is doing next, partly to get some buy-in, but partly to maybe trigger some questions for the Q&A session. We are going to be putting our request for data to health funds. The plan there is that we do want to look in a little bit more detail around evidence of some of the behaviour, such as the hit and run, some of the actual gross margins that we've been seeing on gold, just to build a better factual base as to exactly what is happening and make sure that there's nothing that what's sometimes currently a little bit anecdotal, because individual funds might have information, but it's not in the public data, can be brought into the light a little bit so that, we can certainly present this is why some of this is happening. We are going to be publishing some more in-depth articles on each of these levers, so watch for those in things such as digital actuaries. We do plan to rise more broadly on these levers of change. We are aware that we're all a bunch of actuaries, and that talking to people from other areas up, there's lots and lots of stakeholders in the private health insurance system. So talking to people who come from a broader area to get their views on what are the best levers, what are some of the pros and cons of those, we think is very, very valuable. And the intention would be both to get their views on what we've already thought of, but they may very well have ideas on other levers which we have not really considered at this stage. And finally, there is plans to write a paper on our findings, timing completely up in the air, that is certainly part of the plan. So certainly if there are other areas for investigation or publication that people think should be being considered, we'd love to hear them either in the Q&A or afterwards if you tap Nathaniel, Nick or I on the shoulder or send one of us an email. So we will move into the Q&A now. So the intention is that everyone is meant to be able to use the app, but we're also have, there is a microphone centrally. So if anyone does want to get up and talk or even have a chat, we're more than happy for you to do that. To try and get things going and get some consideration, we have put two poll questions up. So we're happy to start answering Q&A questions in the meantime, but also everyone can have a look at the poll and maybe give us something to talk about if there aren't so many questions. The first one, and there is meant to be...
That's okay, Anthony. If you're happy to take some questions while we wait for that to work. Thanks to Dimity, who's posted some questions in the live chat. A key value proposition of PHI is to avoid the waiting periods in the public system. How would we continue to show value for PHI if the waiting period was even longer than the public system, as to the up to 5-year waiting period in your proposal?
Thank you, Dimity. I'm happy to take that one. So the idea would be to provide additional incentives in the same way that lifetime health cover provides an financial incentive to maintain continuous cover. That would be the idea of waiting periods, and it would try and address some of the hit and run behaviour that we're potentially seeing on Gold, where we see join serve the 12-month waiting period, then either claim, lapse or downgrade your cover. So that would be the idea of that one. So I think your point was how do we continue to maintain access to care through extending waiting periods? So yeah, I guess it would be the case that for those who are new to system or about to join PHI for the first time, it would be trying to incentivize them to do so at a point before they potentially start planning to claim. And I think potentially that one also helps it that helps the PHI product return more to an insurance principles based approach to addressing financial risk.
Oh yeah, it'd be politically significantly.
Yeah. Proposed that idea. Yeah, I mean certainly it was listed as one of the cons that you would have probably a pushback by media, et cetera, when there's the extension. But you'd also probably have a lot more people with complaints, et cetera, so going to the ombudsman, et cetera, where they haven't understood their waiting periods, where they think it's unfair that waiting period is applied to them. So there are definitely cons with it.
We've got a related question here. Has there any? You talked about the Irish experience here. Are there any transition lessons from the Irish experience? Does anyone have any experience of that they can talk to?
not for myself, but I might actually pass that one out to the audience if anyone is in a position to comment on that.
No. My impression was that the Irish rules have been around for a while, so I don't think there was a transition per se. So, yes, obviously in Australia, the fact that you've got the current access and then they'd be shifted out would be seen as a negative.
Interesting thing with the Irish situation is funds have the option to waive waiting periods as well, potentially as part of a marketing offer or something like that.
Okay, the next question. Do you have any insights or opinion on which aspects of the options considered are politically acceptable?
Yeah, look, probably not too many of them, if I'm being honest. As particularly as we've just touched on with waiting periods, risk equalisation, highly complex, difficult to explain to the average punter. Changing government rebates, again, that's something generally the broader public do understand reasonably well. So if we were going to fiddle with those settings or potentially link some rebates to higher tier participation, then that also could be potentially controversial, particularly too if we were talking about changing some of the tax settings around the MLS or potentially some of the other changes there as well, direct funding for private services such as mental health and obstetrics, again, like diverting more taxpayer funding towards the private health system, again, probably not a politically wise move in the current environment, as you might say. But again, some of the changes that more directly would need to be implemented by funds, such as, you know, forcing them to have an open gold product or one that's for sale on their website, for example. Again, like from a political perspective, that would, or to the average punter, that just seems like a no-brainer, right? So yeah, there's a range of these which should be fairly well received, I think. But yeah, again, some of these would be quite challenging or quite coolly recepted. But I think that's part of our job as thought leaders in this area to try and explain why we think some of these changes might be needed or desirable.
Got to grab the mic.
My voice was big enough. I might have misunderstood, but you mentioned the risk equalisation is difficult to explain to the average punter. Is that not risk equalisation in the sense of what they've done in CTP schemes in New South Wales? It's like something that's in the back end that the customer doesn't know about, but insurers will know. So can stick around.
Yes. So there's a current risk equalisation system, which is what's leading to those recovery rates we mentioned earlier. So if we made changes to the risk equalisation system, the quick one is that it probably does fix some of those. It reduces the cost of those high, those clinical categories currently have a high cost to the fund because they've got no reinsurance or participation in risk equalisation on that at all. So it effectively reduces the cost to the fund, so which incentivizes the funds to then reduce premiums. But that is then spread across every policy. So all other policies would go up, or you'd have to rebalance the system so that some of the claims which currently get recoveries get less recoveries to try and keep the amount of cross-subsidisation the same. So either way, someone else is going to be paying more. And members probably won't understand. They'll see an increase in their premiums on those other policies. They won't understand, well, that's because we've just made it easier for you to buy the gold policy, because the gold policy will still probably be more expensive because it's the gold standard in coverage, and they may not necessarily be thrilled with the idea that they're paying more, so it's easier to buy a gold policy, which they don't really want anyway, especially if they're, say, buying it for LHC or tax purposes.
We probably have time for one or two more questions, but Anthony, do you want to go to your second poll question?
Well, yes, this one hasn't worked quite so well because we can't see enough of the screen. But we are seeing there that obviously risk equalisation is popular, so is adding the coverage to other tiers, and funds must have an open gold product. We would say that with that one of the reasons we didn't put that in that higher, more detailed explanation is because we do think that would lead to potentially some industry shenanigans. So if everyone was required to have an open gold product, maybe they do, but it's so expensive that it's not really a realistic offer. And trying to restrict trying to make rules to protect something like that becomes very, very difficult. It requires a high level of regulation. It does look like government rebates aren't necessarily so popular. If we move on to the last question, it was just, do you agree that accessibility is a key issue? Because obviously we've assumed that we do think accessibility is an issue, that it is the key one. And that does capture quite a few elements, because if you're going to improve accessibility but keep the system viable, there are financial restraints on what you do. But we would be interested then in whether or not your thoughts agree with us on that.
Okay. Well, there's two questions in the same mold. What do you think the status quo looks like? Or the other way of expressing is, what is the alternative? Will funds pull out of gold products altogether?
So, I mean, I don't see any reason why the current trends wouldn't continue, which is lower access, less gold products offered, especially ones with low excess levels, higher premiums, and it becoming more and more of a niche product. I mean, many of us in the room here are actuaries, so we know the maths. We understand that if you have the good risks leaving that product and going to things such as Silver Plus, that's the inevitable result.
Yeah, and it's interesting, right? The scrutiny hasn't gone away. The headlines are still there, and we're seeing additional oversight from the minister around some of the behaviours that are occurring around product phoenixing or grandfathering as well, of which the experience with adverse selection of gold is a key driver, right? So, yeah, I think I wouldn't say it's a concrete wall that we're driving into, but I think there's certain obstacles that the industry is going to have to confront on this, whether we do something about it as part of this working group or not.
Right, there's lots of questions flowing in. I think we'll have to take these on notice and come back to you. So there's a fair few around risk equalisation, but I think it's timely that we say thank you and recognise the contribution of the working group. I think it's been a great experience in terms of engagement with stakeholders, in terms of thinking with creating frameworks to think constructively about how actuaries can contribute to the solution, thinking about all those different stakeholder impacts. And obviously it's a wicked problem, and it's one that is going to need a lot of stakeholder consultation to get over the line. So thank you so much to the working group for your work, and can you please join me in thanking Anthony and Nathaniel.